All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
This is Dale Thronberry, and first of all, I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving from all of us at Veterans Radio. Hope you had a great gathering of friends and family. This week on Veterans Radio, we look back on what Thanksgiving meant to us and what it was like to celebrate Thanksgiving while we were serving overseas. We've taken bits and pieces from our 2008 and 2010 Thanksgiving programs. So join me, Bob Gould and Gary Lilly, and all of our guests as we reminisce about those Thanksgivings from so long ago. And stay tuned, because you don't miss Gary Lilly's interview with Navy veteran George Perrault. George was part of the Honor Guard after President Kennedy's assassination, who stood over his casket in the Capitol Rotunda. And so now, here we go. Here's Veterans Radio.
Cheer. Good morning, America, and how are you? My name is Dale Thronberry, and welcome to Veterans Radio, America's number one veterans program. Thanksgiving program, 2 days after Thanksgiving. Most of us are finally recovered from Thanksgiving. Webcam operator in there, and that's my nephew, Eric Ost. Eric, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good to be here.
This is kind of cool. We're waiting to getting a family oriented. I want to introduce everybody to my nephew, Eric. We were talking earlier this morning about the military history that he's got going on. He has relatives that were fought in a 14-year war between Sweden and Norway about 300 years ago. He had an uncle in World War II. His mom works at the VA hospital in Orange, New Jersey. His dad was a cop for 25 years. So he's got a good background going there, and I'm very pleased that Eric is able to help us out today during the program. Joining me in the studio is the old CB himself, Gary Lilly.
Hey, CB can do, and happy Thanksgiving to all.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, we've been having a lot of, we were trying to figure out what we could make out of stuffing yesterday, and Eric brought up the idea that probably a nice stuffing sandwich would be good.
I have one. I brought home from Chicago.
We forgot the turkey. We had more stuffing and so on. So it's a great opportunity to get together with family and friends, of course, and that's the whole purpose of Thanksgiving. And we're going to talk a little bit about the history of Thanksgiving and what it means to America, because it's kind of a unique feast, if you want to call it that, that we celebrate and have been celebrating off and on for close to 400 years. And we're going to start off with the first one in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and we'll give you a little background on that later on, and what Thanksgiving means to you out there in our listening audience, and what Thanksgiving meant to you when you were in the service, and over what happened on Thanksgiving. Now, a lot of times we realize that it is really just another day in the life of a soldier, Marine, sailor, airman, so on. I don't want to leave anybody out. Coast Guard person. We don't want to leave anybody out, but now, we're going to talk about how the military really goes out of their way to make sure that everybody does have a very hot and complete Thanksgiving dinner, if at all possible.
I want to go home. I want to go home. Oh. Sleep in Detroit City.
I want to go home. That's one of the one things for sure that we all wanted to do when Thanksgiving rolled around and we suddenly came to the realization that we weren't at home. And I picked that particular song today to talk with our other partner on Veterans Radio, Bob Gould, and Bob is on the line. Bob, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Oh, thank you, Dale. Hello there, Gary. Hello there, Maddie.
Good morning, Bob.
We're on a mission right now, so I couldn't be in the studio, but I just had a chance. I love that. I love that bump. I want to go home, boy. And you know what? They call that a segue in this business, because the story I'm about to say exactly is that. Way back, my first half of my total service was with the Big Red One. And it was kind of uneventful with Thanksgiving. I mean, you know, Thanksgiving was Thanksgiving, so I thought it was pretty cool being in the service. And then I went in the 101st Airborne. Now, the 101st Airborne, strike one way back then. We were strike one. What happens? The missile crisis. I just got there. And here comes the missile crisis. All of a sudden, we're having, what, nuclear? Gary, you were going to say something about that. What? You know that? There were nuclear warheads or something?
Well, we just found out a couple of years ago that basically Kennedy and Khrushchev, especially Khrushchev, lost control of what was going on, and we were much closer to nuclear war than anybody ever imagined. And at that time, we thought we were pretty close to nuclear war.
So I'm going to jump in and just remind people, this is 1962,
right?
And the Soviet Union had placed nuclear weapons in Cuba, only 90 miles away from Florida. So that's the setup here, Bob. Go ahead.
Well, things got kind of cooled down. It was about a week. I think they had already boarded the ship or about to board the ship, and the missiles turned around. However, let's show some strength. Now, the reason I'm saying this, folks, is because, yeah, we served during peacetime, but we also served during tough times and kept the peace, because the first unit to be sent as a show of force was, of course, 101st Airborne. So I think it was like day five of the Cuban Missile Crisis. We're on our way. We're at it. And I remember looking out the window and seeing palm trees. I wasn't sure if we were at Guantanamo or where. When we landed, I think it was Homestead. And immediately set up a perimeter. The CVs came in and put in the officers' club first, of course, right? You know, isn't that right, Gary?
Yeah, they probably said, hey, you guys, do us first. We got a couple of 5-gallon cans of medical alcohol.
I'm sure.
That's how they bribed us.
Well, the officers' club got set up. Now, remember, this is a missile crisis. We were going to be the tip of the spear going into Cuba. We were fully equipped. We flew down, and I think there were C-130s. We flew down in C-130s, and there we were. So we were there for 6 weeks. Now, most of the units were being sent back, the 101st, most of companies, etc., were being sent back, except us. We were the last to go. So we're thinking it's like the day before Thanksgiving. Hey, this will be nice. I want to go home. We're going to be home. Wait a minute. Somebody had an idea back at Fort Campbell. Why? Heck, let's have the boys, let's turn this into an exercise. So we jumped. The following day, Thanksgiving Day, we parachuted, true story, into Fort Campbell. I actually met a guy that was part of the National Guard pilots that flew us. Anyway, we jumped in and landed at one of the drop zones way, way, way away from the base, about 25, 30 miles. We could see the base up on a hill. We could see the base. But there we were, and we were told, and you follow orders, right? We were told to stand fast. Don't go anywhere. Now, we could have made this march. Remember, it's Thursday afternoon. We're getting in our gear. We're waiting for the trucks. The trucks never came. Now, again, the reason I'm telling this story is that it was a long night, and it was Kentucky, and it was cool, and we had nothing to eat, but we talked a lot and reminisced about our families. I think it was the only Thanksgiving I've ever missed in my entire life that I can remember. So there we were, looking out, and of course we waited for the trucks, right? That's what you're supposed to do. Stand fast. And they didn't come, something like 3 o'clock in the morning, 2, 3 o'clock, and of course we were too tired. So that's my little story. Yeah, there are a lot of guys from Detroit there. We talked about Detroit. We had some black guys that were singing some Motown stuff. It got to be pretty good. You know, I guess a couple of guys had like, sea rations or candy bars, so we kind of split that up. But it was a Thanksgiving to be remembered because... Well, we just survived.
Hey, Bob. Gary. You heard about the guy making his first jump with 101st, and they told him, now, when you jump, your parachute's going to open by the static line. Don't worry about it. But in case it doesn't open, then you've got your reserve chute. Pull that reserve chute, and that'll open. and you'll go to the ground, and the trucks will be waiting. So the guy jumped, and the main chute didn't open, tore away from the static line. And he pulled the reserve chute, and that didn't open. And he said to himself, I bet those darn trucks aren't going to be there either.
Gary, you waited all day and night to tell that story because you know I was going to be on Good Going.
That's right.
That's sweet. But to all my brothers and sisters out there at 101st Airborne, they are in Afghanistan, Iraq, they're in that area, and the Big Red One, give me a big salute. God bless you, and keep it up, man. Really keep it up. And everybody take care on Veterans Radio. I'll be listening over in the car radio. How's that?
All right. Thanks a lot, Bob. Appreciate it. Take care.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
He is always
full. You were waiting for that all day. We knew that. You always have to have something about airborne that you want to talk about. You know, it's kind of interesting what Bob was talking about. The idea behind Thanksgiving was to celebrate harvest and so forth. But I wanted to just mention one thing before we have our next guest on from the phone, is that on January 6, 1941, Franklin Delano Roosevelt gave his inaugural address for, I don't know, his third or fourth term, whatever it happened to be at the time. But it was talking about his four freedoms. And I thought this was really important because this is why our men and women are overseas today, which is why World War II, Korea, the whole bit. And that was that people everywhere in the world ought to enjoy these four freedoms. And the first one is freedom of speech and expression. The second is freedom of worship, to worship wherever you want and how you want. The third is freedom from want. Now, that's the poster that we had up on our flyer this week. And that was one of the Norman Rockwell photograph of a Thanksgiving dinner. And finally is a freedom from fear. And really, I think psychologically and philosophically, this is what we try to do here in America, is we want everyone to enjoy the freedoms that we have. We are so fortunate here in America to be able to say what we want, worship where we want, find the food that we need, or somebody will help us with that, and finally is a freedom from fear. We can pretty much do whatever we want, and we don't have to worry about somebody kicking in the door and coming to get us.
And who protects those freedoms?
Our troops right now, but that's also right. It's our support as civilians that are supporting these troops. And that's the thing that we talk about, especially today around Thanksgiving. We want you to remember those men and women that are around the world trying to protect our freedoms in addition to offering these freedoms to other countries. Now, whether they want them or not, that's up to them. But at least they should have the opportunity to try.
You can support troops from anything from sending cards for Christmas. And I'll remind people about little Destiny Edie that we've had on the program before. She started when she was 10 years old. She's now 14. She has sent 40,000 cards to the troops. She raises the money for postage for the cards, sits at public events with a booth, gets people to sign them, and sends them off. 40,000, can you imagine?
I know. Well, Thanksgiving is a lot of time where we do appreciate what we have, and many, many of you out there I know have shared over the last couple of days with your own bounty. Got another caller on the phone. I want to bring him on, and this is from Saline, Michigan, and I've got Ralph Winter on the phone. Ralph, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning, Dale and Gary.
How are you doing?
Good morning, Ralph.
Good. I'm doing well. I thought I'd mention my Thanksgiving in Vietnam because actually it was very memorable because, in fact, it was a very good occasion. I was an Army grunt with Charlie Company of the 3rd Battalion, 1st Infantry, 11th Brigade in the AmeriCal Division. So we were based off of Firebase 411 near Quang Nai. And I remember on Thanksgiving, we really didn't, I don't think we were told ahead of time, but we were kind of pulled back from any regular mission, and our company was camped not too far from the fire base rather than actually going out on a search and destroy or any other activity at that time. And the big surprise was supply choppers came in, and we got a really fancy Thanksgiving dinner. We got turkey, and we got the one thing that I truly remember about it was that we got real potatoes. When we were on the fire base, we'd have, you know, meals on the fire base at the mess hall, but it was always instant potatoes. That the food was really pretty bad there, truthfully. I think the sea rats and MREs were better at times. But I remember Thanksgiving, we really got a great meal, and, you know, turkey, real potatoes, and some of the other fixings. So it was a pretty big surprise when that came out. So we really ate well and really had a great day. And fortunately, we didn't have any interference from Charlie or anybody else that day. So from that standpoint, and this was, I don't think I said, this was 1970. So
okay, I was just going to ask that question, Ralph. But thank you so very much for calling into Veterans Radio.
Hey, real quick, Ralph.
Yeah.
Do you remember what those containers were called that the food was brought out? Dale and I were talking about it at breakfast this morning, and neither one of us could remember the containers.
I can picture them, but I don't remember what they were called. Okay.
There's a quiz out there. Give us a call.
They were the big insulated containers, you know, and they were the Army good old drab green, you know, the typical.
Right, yep.
Yeah.
Don't remember.
Well, thank you very much, Ralph, for calling into Veterans Radio. We greatly appreciate that. We want to hear from you out there. If you've got a story, if you can remember the name of those containers, and I wanted to, as Ralph pointed out, the helicopters, that would be me, just one of many.
Oh, you didn't do them all on your own?
I didn't do them all, but I was a short-timer at Thanksgiving. And by short-timer, I mean I think I had about 10 days left to go in my tour, and I was pretty much hunkered down in the bunker by then. And my company commander came in and said, Dale, we need you to fly a mission. We're going to take Thanksgiving dinner out to the troops in the field. And I'm going, well, as long as I don't have to fly, you know, more than 10 miles outside of the radius of Long Beach, I'll be fine. He says, no, this is what you're going to do. So I checked it out. And we did go out all over Three Corps dropping off food in those big containers. And, I can't remember the name of them, but I can see them just as vividly as Ralph probably can. And we dropped them off, and we gave hot meals to our troops in the field, and we had, as he pointed out, real potatoes instead of those reconstituted things that they tried to pass off as potatoes. And I think I flew about 10 hours on Thanksgiving Day.
As a CB, I could never complain about the food we got after we got past the sea rats, because we burned a lot of calories, and you keep the CBs and a lot of food and a lot of beer, and they'll work.
Well, that's true. You know, if you do provide food, and I can't complain about my food compared to people like Michael J. Martin and so forth that were out in the field, and probably Ralph also, who was out in the field all the time living on sea rations. The only sea rations I usually have, that would be lunch. And so I was very fortunate with the type of food. In fact, we used to go, I'll bet you the best food that we found in Vietnam was Navy food. And I don't know what it is. And they had tablecloths and real plates. And,
no, you're thinking of the Air Force. Come on.
I don't remember who exactly it was, but it was certainly I know the Navy had these great foods, especially when we got into the officers' clubs, which was pretty cool.
When we come back, I want to talk about my Thanksgiving over there.
In Ann Arbor, Michigan, happy Thanksgiving, folks. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Platoon Sergeant Finnis McCleary continued his assault on the North Vietnamese position, although severely wounded. Details after this.
College isn't cheap. In fact, it can be downright expensive. But the Air Force has a way for you to get that college education. If you attend classes while on active duty, we'll pay up to 100% of your tuition. And you could have more than $35,000 for school waiting for you through the GI Bill. For more information, call 1-800-423-USAF or log on to airforce.com. This message brought to you by the U.S. Air Force and this station.
A combined force was assigned the mission of assaulting a reinforced company of well-entrenched North Vietnamese Army regulars. As McCleary led his men up the hill and across an open area to close with the enemy, his platoon and other friendly elements were pinned down by heavy fire coming from the fortified enemy positions. Realizing the severe damage that the enemy could inflict on the combined force, McCleary rose from his sheltered position and began a one-man assault on the bunker complex. He moved across 60 meters of open ground as bullets struck all around him and rockets and grenades literally exploded at his feet. as he came within 30 meters of the key enemy bunker, McCleary began firing furiously from the hip and throwing hand grenades. At this point in his assault, shrapnel painfully wounded him, but with complete disregard for his wounds, he continued his advance on the key bunker and killed all of its occupants. Having successfully and single-handedly breaching the enemy perimeter, he climbed to the top of the bunker he had just captured, and in full view of the enemy, shouted encouragement to his men to follow his assault. As the friendly forces moved forward, McCleary began a lateral assault on the enemy bunker line. He continued to expose himself to the intense enemy fire as he moved from bunker to bunker, destroying each in turn. He was wounded a second time by shrapnel as he destroyed and routed the enemy from the hill. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
You're listening to a very special Veterans Radio look back at Thanksgiving in the military.
We're back on Veterans Radio, and that is our good friend Kate Smith. well, you know, wouldn't it have been great to have her on live at some point? I was always that song always brings tears to my eyes, and I can remember singing that as a kid during Thanksgiving, in the lead up to Thanksgiving. It seems that we would always sing these patriotic songs.
Wasn't the Philadelphia Flyers hockey team would have her there at every home game to sing that?
I think she was probably their good luck charm.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines. They sing that song quite often now at baseball games during the seventh inning instead of, well, they do still sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, but right. as a tribute. And it's always a very powerful song. We're talking about Thanksgiving and what we're thankful for and what, you know, how Thanksgiving arrived wherever we happen to be in the service around the world during our time when we were in the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, and everything else I can think of as far as the service is concerned. And we've asked you to call in. We're still asking you to call in at 877-573-7825. And we do have another caller on the line. That's Tom Podsel. Is that
Podsel?
Podsel, well, Gary knows who it is. Tom, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning, and I'm going to send you guys over some turkey in a Mermite food container.
Mermite! All right, he wins the prize. We've got to get him a shirt.
All right. Thank you.
How is everything?
Everything's great, Tom. How about with you and your family?
Good. Had a good Thanksgiving dinner. It's a little cold here in Chicago, but I guess you guys got the same weather.
Well, I just came back from Chicago last night. It was cold and it was windy. It was living up to its name.
Yes, it was. I put up my outdoor Christmas decorations yesterday morning, so I was freezing.
well, you guys did send the weather on to us because I came back by train last night, and there was no difference. It was here the same as it was there.
Yeah, we're always glad to send the cold weather to you guys.
so thankful for you. Hey, you were on the two programs we had on the Battle of Neuilly on Hill, and you wrote a book, Tam Key, The Battle of Neuilly on Hill?
Yes, I have.
And it can be bought on Amazon and other places online?
Yes, thank you, Gary.
And at bookstores. Great book. I read it in one sitting, getting ready for the program, and boy, was that a vicious battle. So that leads up to what have you got to be thankful for, and how was your Thanksgiving over there in Vietnam?
I spent three Thanksgivings in the military overseas, one in Vietnam and two in Germany. And the one in Vietnam, I don't recall very well. I know I was on LZ Center with 81 mortars at that time. And I do recall getting the hot turkey dinner. And your caller before had mentioned that it was one of the better meals we ever got out, you know, in Vietnam, was that Thanksgiving and Christmas dinner also.
That's very true. I can remember it was delicious.
I was not there for Christmas, thankfully, but that... I was saying I want to tell you about my Thanksgiving. I don't remember it. I'm sure we got a turkey dinner, but I don't. It was I know it was another 12-hour work day, and I'm sure we got turkey. That's all I can remember about it. Tom, LZ Center, I've seen photographs of it. That's about as barren of a hill, except it wasn't. It was pretty steep. And so there wasn't a lot of top to it for you guys to fit on.
Yeah, yes. One end was very steep, and the eastern end was a very long slope that we had to walk up as infantry companies when we had to pull bunker guard on center. But the other three sides were, yeah, it was very steep.
Thanksgiving was pretty much in the middle of the monsoons, or near the beginning of the monsoons. Do you remember that Thanksgiving?
Yeah, actually, I just got a... If you remember, I've been in contact with the grandson of an NVA soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got an email from him today, and he told me they're in the middle of the monsoons right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's actually in Vietnam now, taking a short break from his studies in Japan, and he's spending it with his family. And he said he wanted to go to Tam Kỳ, but it's been raining too hard, and they can't travel.
Oh, I was at Tam Kỳ when I went back in early March of 2008, and there's pretty flat ground around there. I can imagine the monsoons would cut it off quite a bit. You guys up on LZ Center, you had pretty deep mud despite the fact that you were up there quite high.
Oh, yeah. Vietnam was all mud during the rainy season.
That's right. I just think it was a time of all those pallets all laid in a row going to the various parts of whatever base you happen to be on, because if you stepped off of that, you sunk up to your knees or your chest.
And I'll tell you what I'm thankful for is that I'm not walking around in the mud of Vietnam anymore. My feet are in fairly good shape by now.
Yes. Yeah, one thing I would like to mention, though, that I do recall about my Thanksgivings in Germany, and I was with a Border Patrol unit, the 3rd Squadron, 14th Armored Cav. And the one thing I remember about all holidays and Sundays, it was the day you got to sleep in late.
Oh.
It's amazing what we remember as being so important. So memorable.
Yeah. I was thinking about that just a minute ago. We had Easter Sunday off. That's the day that we had off, and we got to sleep in, and oh, it was heaven. It was instead of, oh, dark 30.
Well, I was very fortunate. You know, one of the things about being a pilot in many cases is that they would restrict us to the number of hours we could fly in any 30-day period. And so once you hit that number, and I think it was 120 hours or something of actual flight time, you had to stay down until that number went below 120. And so that means sometimes you could sleep in, but then they'd come back in the afternoon and they'd say, okay, now you're below 120, get out there and go again. And so I do remember that. And I do remember the Thanksgiving only because of the delivery of the food.
I'm sure guys like Tom appreciate you.
Well, that was our job, to bring out the food, bring out the bullets. Whatever they needed, we would do it.
And you guys did a mighty fine job. I have to say you did. We appreciated it.
Hey, Tom, how's your squad mate doing? Have you talked to him lately? Who was on with you on Battle of
Tatooine? Ron
Kosiba? I'm sorry?
Yeah, Ron is doing fine.
Good deal.
Yeah, he lives there in Michigan, and they had a wonderful Thanksgiving dinner, he and his family.
Oh, that's good. You guys stayed in pretty good touch with each other.
Yes, we do.
From
Ron has become a very good friend.
Grunts. Well, thanks a lot for calling in, Tom.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Greatly appreciate it. I wanted to read a menu that I got in an email from somebody from the, better look at this up and make sure I've got it right, 15th Field Artillery Regiment. That was in Thanksgiving 1965, the 2nd or the 32nd Arty. Boy, you know, I still can't remember the names of all these things and what they all mean, but... Anyway, we've got a Thanksgiving Day poster that we're putting up on our webcast. But the menu included, and this is really important, the menu included shrimp cocktail, crackers, roast turkey, cornbread dressing, giblet gravy, cranberry sauce, mashed potatoes, real, candied sweet potatoes, buttered peas, assorted crisp relishes, hot butter buns, butter, fruitcake, mincemeat pie, pumpkin pie with whipped cream, assorted fresh fruit, assorted nuts, assorted candy, tea, milk, and coffee.
Where was that?
This was Thanksgiving with LZ Diamond Head, it looks like.
Vietnam?
In Vietnam. This is what they served.
What year?
I don't know. One of these says 65, one of them says 67. So, and there's a notice here, a little note here from W.C. Westmoreland, General United States Army Commanding. This Thanksgiving Day, we find ourselves in a foreign land assisting in the defense of the rights of free men everywhere. On this day, we should offer our grateful thanks for the abundant life which we and our loved ones have been provided. May we each pray for his continued blessings and guidance upon our endeavors to assist the Vietnamese people in their struggle to attain an everlasting peace within a free society. So there you go.
The messages from the leadership, you know, that meant a lot, although at the time you tried to...
You know, at the time, we didn't really pay attention because we figured they were the ones. It's like me being mad at LBJ and at Nixon because I figured I got drafted by Johnson and got sent to Vietnam by Nixon. So at that time, I didn't like either one of them.
Are you starting to get over it?
I'm working on it. I'm working on it. We've got another caller on the line right now. We've got Keith from Detroit. Keith, welcome to Veterans Radio. Hello, Keith.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you, Gary?
I'm good. How are you, Keith?
Well, I'm alive and well. So, all things considered, I figured I would share a Thanksgiving story with you guys.
Please do.
I actually left Vietnam on Thanksgiving Day. And not only was I extremely thankful for that, but the fact is with the date change and time change, I actually landed back here in the States on Thanksgiving Day. So when you look at it in that way, I was doubly thankful. So,
I guess so.
And both of my children and now my grandchildren hear the stories and are taught, if you will, the value or the purpose of Thanksgiving and of giving things. And they even recognize that, you know, I have a lot to be thankful for.
Truly do. What did you do over in Vietnam, Keith?
I was military police convoy escort.
Okay. I wanted you to say that because anybody that hears MP, they picture a couple of guys out there ready to arrest anybody that walks around with their hands in their pockets. But you guys had some pretty dangerous duty in Vietnam.
I was a gunner. I worked in M60 machine gun, open gun jeep. I usually ran lead of convoys. We ran what we call Class A Priority 1, which was fuel, rocket, mortar, ammunition. I was up in the Central Highlands and ran anywhere from Thu Hoa in the north to Phan Thiet in the south. So we covered a whole lot of ground and, ran into a lot of situations that were less than pleasant.
I can imagine that was a pretty active part of the country, and having a whole bunch of stuff behind you that could blow up. I imagine the only people that felt worse about that were the people driving the trucks.
Well, yeah, it's one of those situations, Gary, where, you know, you learn that as the lead, if they could, disable you and or usually I had a gun truck behind me, but if it could get one of us, the first two in the convoy.
Yep.
The idea then was is they could stop all of us. So
it became
a cat and mouse type of game where, as long as we could keep running, we did our best to avoid a situation that, we didn't want to get ourselves into.
We got a break.
I got to take a break. Keith, thank you so very much for calling into Veterans Radio. We'll be right back after this message.
Dale, you have a story now that you're going to be telling us about. So
well,
let's
yes.
Just go right ahead into that.
Okay, we can go straight into it. Give us a little time at the end of the program. But November 22nd of 2008, our partner Gary Lilly did an interview with George Perrault. And George is a Navy veteran, and he was part of the Honor Guard, as I mentioned earlier in the program, for President Kennedy's viewing in the Capitol button. So we're going to talk with, go right into this interview. This takes place in November 2008. Gary is talking to George Perrault, and they mentioned the earlier program, another guest on the program named David Ballantyne, who was a helicopter pilot with the Marines. So George does that. And so we'll start right now.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we've switched seats, and this is Gary Lilly, and we're 45 years ago today, anybody that was alive remembers what they were doing when they heard that President Kennedy was assassinated. As I mentioned earlier, I worked in a factory. Do you guys remember all the jokes that were going around? It was like every day there'd be a new joke about President Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And I walked back in after lunch, and a guy working on a press said, "Did you hear the president's been shot?" And I broke into a big grin. I was waiting for the punchline. He said, "No, I'm serious. He was shot." And I asked, "Was he killed?" And he said, "We don't know yet." Later on, of course, we learned he was. And the next few days, it was all the nation mourned. There was an amazing presidential funeral. And this morning we have George Perrault, who was a young Navy enlisted man at that time. He was part of the Honor Guard serving in the Rotunda. George, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Pleased to be here, Gary.
When you first were named to the Honor Guard, how did that come about?
Well, I'll give you a little background here. My first duty station in the Navy, I'm a retired Navy Chief Petty Officer. I served from 1957 to 1982. I'd like to say hi to all the fellow veterans out there, and a special hello to Al and Barb Wood in Tasmania, Australia. Good day, mate. Colonel Ballantyne, if you're still listening, I'm sorry the Navy lost you, but at least you had a good code name, Klondike. It happens to be a Navy ship named the USS Klondike, which was a repair ship, and that was still in commission when you were in Vietnam. My first duty station in the Navy, I was on a oiler tanker named the Salamone, AO-26, and after 5 years at sea, I got orders to the Naval Station, Washington, D.C. And I worked in the supply department. I was the second-class petty officer at the time. I had approximately about 6 years in the Navy by the time I got to Washington.
What is the Army equivalent of a petty officer second class?
E-5,
which would be sergeant?
Sergeant.
Okay.
And at the time, President, you know, all the armed services in Washington have an honor guard. The Army, Navy, Marine, Coast Guard, they all have a separate honor guard. I'm sure you've seen them at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, the Arlington cemeteries, the state dinners in the White House, heads of department, heads of state, they come to Washington. Each service has their own ceremonial guard, if you might call it that. At the time, President Hoover and General MacArthur were both ill, and they wanted to supplement the ceremonial guard, knowing that there possibly might be two state funerals at the same time. So my name went in, and a fellow sailor in my division, his name went in, and you think nothing of it. Their names went in on a list. And come that Friday afternoon, I've gotten a phone call from my wife that said the president had been assassinated. Our president had been shot, and we dropped everything, and we rushed for radio and to listen to some of the details. And then you think nothing of it, because my name went in as part of the ceremonial guard, not knowing that would be the President Kennedy. And the shore patrol come and pick us up from our office, and or the base police, I believe it was, and off we went. And we went off to the ceremonial guard barracks in Washington, which is right across the way from my work. And we did a little practice. And believe it or not, my fellow division guy and I had, at least we knew some military commands and so forth. But we put a trash can, and the ceremonial guard chief was there, who trains these sailors all the time. So he had to train us. So we put a trash can in the middle of the room. We grabbed broom handles, mop handles, and everything to simulate rifles. And we did a few minutes of practice that the chief said, "This is basically how it's going to go. You're going to be on President Kennedy's detail. Here's how it's going to go." Off we went from there. For reasons unknown, we went to a funeral home just down the street from Bethesda Navy Hospital, a place called Gawler's Funeral Home. And a few of us were put in there for reasons we still don't know. And if I'm not mistaken, I can't remember if it was evening or by that time, but all the drapes were drawn in the funeral home, and they tell us not to look outside. Well, that's all you need to do is tell a sailor not to do it. So we looked behind the drapes, and all the press was out there. We could see all the enormous lights and everything. We couldn't figure out what we were doing in the funeral home. So after the funeral home, We just stayed there for a few hours. After the funeral home, we were escorted to the White House. And I might tell you, the first entry into the White House is really something. And we went down in the basement, and there's a... In the old days, they tell me it was a civil defense bunker, like in the White House. It's all cement. There's racks. If you're familiar with the Navy ships, there were racks four high that folded up. That's where the White House police is at now. Cause I remember seeing all their trophy cases and whatever have you down there. If any mass threat with the White House, that's where all the police would be stationed down there and so forth. So we walked through there, and then they took us to the presidential theater. We were housed in the theater. Then approximately 4:30 in the morning, they brought in President Kennedy from Dallas. They brought in President Kerry from Bethesda. They brought in President Kennedy to the White House. They had a private room for a while. Then he was in the East Room, but then this was Saturday daytime. Then he was in the East Room of the White House.
What were you doing during that time?
We were in the presidential theater just waiting word what to do. So I had the good fortune of standing one watch in the East Room of the White House.
So you did stand watch over the president's casket in the White House.
Right. And that basically was for a lot of the dignitaries. I remember I have pictures of President Eisenhower and a few others and so forth. I suppose a lot of your senators and whatever have you That was not open to the public in the White House.
Okay.
So the dignitaries were in the White House.
I vaguely remember that.
Then he went from the White House to the Capitol Rotunda, and again I had the I don't know if you'll call it good fortune, but I stood the very first watch when they brought him into the Capitol Rotunda. And I brought some pictures with me, and I know it's going to be hard to describe.
Well, the Capitol Rotunda has a huge room in the middle with a very high domed ceiling.
Right.
And you had brought along a National Geographic, and one of the most famous photographs taken of the president as he was laying in state has four servicemen, one from each major branch of the service, standing about 15 feet off, 20 feet off from each corner.
Right.
And you were the Navy man in that photograph.
Right. All five services are representative. There are four in each corner, and there was an officer at the head of the casket. And
so the Coast Guard was included?
Yes.
Oh, great.
And the commands are all silent when you're standing there. If the officer at the head of the casket gives the most remote nod of his head, where each guy in the corner can see it. And then we silently count to three, and then we go to parade rest, and then again back to attention. Then when our relief comes in, it's the same way. It's all done by a very slight nod of the head. Then we change the guard, and we were approximately on a half hour and 2 hours off on the watch.
So you guys did an hour or two of practice about that. You basically knew what you were going to do, And you did it, and everybody thought that probably you had been performing this, doing that all your career.
Right.
I remember seeing that, and it was very, very professional.
None of the gentlemen I stood watch with were part of the Navy Ceremonial Guard. For the most part, all the Ceremonial Guard kids are what we call non-rated E3 and below. They have senior petty officers in charge of the Ceremonial Guard. But all these guys around the casket were guys like me. They got put on the detail, unaware of what kind of detail was going to be with the president.
We've got a little over a minute left in this segment, but one of the things I always wondered about is when you're doing that, your uniform has to be really squared away and your shoes have to be really shiny. Were they already that way, or did you have a little bit of time to prep for it?
We had to work in our service dress uniform at the naval station, our service dress blues. So needless to say, you had to look good for work every day when you had inspection.
A lot of officers around.
And so forth. Yeah, that's true.
Right.
So off we went.
So you were already all set.
I was already all set.
I remember being able to look down and see my reflection in my shoes when I was standing in ranks.
In between the daytime and when we stayed over at Fort Myers, we had no toiletry articles with us for shaving and everything, so that was lent to us by other soldiers over at Fort Myers. We stayed over there and had sack lunches and whatnot over at Fort Myers. And
then we're going to come back to that, George, in the next segment. We're back on Veterans Radio. 45 years ago today, President Kennedy was assassinated, and we're talking to George Perrault, who was a Navy honor guard over President Kennedy's casket as he was laying in state in the rotunda. And we've got about 10 minutes to pack in 3 days of funeral. George, you stood guard over the casket in the rotunda. What was the mood in the room? That was when the general public got to file past and see him.
Having stood the very first watch, I have in front of me a centerfold of one of my magazines, but standing the very first watch, the entire heads of state of the world was basically there, probably except Castro and Khrushchev of Russia. But very, very quiet. You could just hear a pin drop. Even the small children were there. You didn't even hear them fussing and so forth. And looking back at the pictures, you know, I have in front of me Jackie and Caroline when they knelt at the casket, and reviewing all my other pictures, I don't see little John. They were both had almost identical outfits on, like, and I don't see little John, so maybe he was fussing and had to go home or something. But it was really solemn, so quiet, and to look around and see all these people and try to figure out who's who. Of course, you can't do a lot of head turning and so forth, so we just had to look around. But, you know, President Eisenhower and President Johnson, Jackie yourself, and Bobby Kennedy, just looking at all these people.
George, there were people. I remember seeing the huge lines that were outside for the people to walk past, and it was a procession of the general public. You'd get in line, and you'd get to walk past the casket. So for the dignitaries, did they have their own place to stand or sit?
No, they're all surrounded in the rotunda. They had the media. Of course, the media wasn't as big back then as it was nowadays. But the media, but practically three-quarters of the rotundas in a circle were all the all the dignitaries and senators and everything were in that rotunda. They were going to not have the rotunda open, I believe it was after midnight, but they estimated the line outside for the public was some 40 city blocks long of people waiting to come in to see, pass by the president. Another thing, when standing watch, the public, when they come through, you know, you see people in crutches, you see soldiers, you see people of the cloth, you see nurses, you see people.
You see America.
Right. You see America of coming in. Just so solemn.
And so it was solemn. You guys were on for an hour, and then you were off for, you'd get relieved for an hour, or was it 2 hours?
No, we were on a half hour and about 2 hours off.
Oh, okay. I was wondering, how could you stand at attention for a full hour? That's hard on the body.
Yeah. Well, again, the officer at the head of the casket, sure. However he timed it at his will, he would give us a nod, we'd go to parade rest.
All right. Well, so when you were off, you'd go to a room and sit there for a break. Is that right?
We were in the old Senate chambers back in the 1800s, right off of the rotunda. One interesting story. I don't have the time to explain how you...
No, you don't have to explain. You were in the room, but I want to hear the story about Ethel Kennedy.
Well, there's a rubber grommet that goes on the bottom of your trousers to make it look like a stovepipe when you're standing up, so you look very military. And when you sit down in the old Navy 13-button uniform, it becomes very tight on your stomach. So you undo your 13 buttons when you're sitting down to relax. So I had my 13 buttons down and a few other ones when you're sitting in the old Senate chambers to relax in between watches. And lo and behold, Ethel Kennedy comes in looking for a telephone. Almost every guy in the room just jumps to attention, naturally, but, you know, not me and a couple of my buddies, because their trousers would have fell down.
With your pants down, right.
Yeah.
I remember we used to do that before big inspections. When you sat down, you'd pull your trousers down so they didn't get wrinkled up, and then you'd redo them when you'd go fall in for inspection. When you went back on, how long were you there? Were you Just the rotunda, or were you other parts of the funeral?
Just the rotunda, well, the White House, then when we shifted to the rotunda. Then after the rotunda, I got dismissed, and the president's casket went to the church and then on to Arlington. And to this day, Gary, I still can't remember how I got home from the rotunda. I lived probably 10 miles from the Capitol. I can't remember how I got home.
Your mind has so many images. I'm watching you as you're talking, and your mind is going back and seeing all those pictures in your mind. So I can understand that.
I think it was the most incredible time in American history up until today, when we were watching that as children and as adults. Just the drum sound of the funeral once they left the rotunda. It still sticks in my head as we're looking at these pictures. And I just wanted to remind our audience that Google has signed a deal with Life magazine to show all of their photographs throughout history. And if you can go on Google and type in Life photos, you can get access to all of these photographs, that many of them that George has here. And I think it's amazing what you'll be able to see.
Bob and I were talking at breakfast earlier. The Air Force One is down in Wright-Patterson Air Base in Ohio. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. And I remember what you were talking about. There was a huge delay while they were getting the casket in the plane. And what happened was there was a bulkhead that was in the way. They had to cut the interior bulkhead out of the plane to get the casket in there and make the turn.
With a saw. I mean, you know, like a...
If you want to see Air Force One that carried the president and where President Johnson was sworn in, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And if you want to see the limousine that President Kennedy was riding in when he was assassinated, it's at the Henry Ford Museum, formerly Greenfield Village in Dearborn, Michigan. Back to George. We've got about a minute and a half left. Where did you watch the funeral, George?
At home. I got home just as they were arriving at Arlington, so I watched the rest of it in Arlington. We didn't have color TVs back then. It was all black and white.
That's the thing that sticks in your mind, is all of our televisions were black and white, and so we thought we were watching a newsreel, but it was real.
Yeah.
It was real time.
I took a day off work of the factory and got chewed out the next day, and I said, hey, fire me if you want. I wanted to watch see the president's funeral.
I have a picture in front of me when President Johnson was sworn in on Air Force One, and reading the article, I guess for almost 3 hours we were out without a president because they had to wait for a federal judge to come in and swear in LBJ.
Well, his time has flown past. We've been talking to George Perrault, who is one of the members of the honor guard of President Kennedy when he was assassinated 45 years ago today. George is in possibly the most famous photograph taken from high up in the rotunda looking down. He's the Navy guy in there. If you go to Google Life magazine pictures, you'll see him. And in the meantime, you are dismissed.
We thank you all for listening today and hope that you've enjoyed the program. You can follow Veterans Radio on our webcast, where you can listen to our archive programs and podcasts, and you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. So until next week, Gary, we miss you so much. This is Dale Thronberry, and again, for all of us at Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.